tax cuts are on the books. We'll have a closer look at what that means for Arkansans. Northwest Arkansas residents speak out against a proposed drone factory, and Little Rock gears up to celebrate the newest federal holiday. Those stories and more are coming up this week on the News Wrap from the Arkansas Newsroom. I'm Daniel Breen, News Director of Little Rock Public Radio. Each week, we're recapping the top stories from all across the natural state. We'll unpack the headlines, share exclusive insights, and provide the context you need to fully grasp the issues that matter most to Arkansans. That's this week on the Arkansas News Wrap, coming up right after the news from NPR. This is the Arkansas News Wrap. I'm Daniel Breen with Little Rock Public Radio. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders signed new tax cuts into law last week, furthering her longstanding desire to phase out the state income tax for good. While some are celebrating, others are warning against the potential negative effects. Little Rock Public Radio's Maggie Ryan spoke with politics and government reporter Josie Lenora to help break it down.
Okay, so let's start where the state budget is right now. We're approaching the end of the fiscal year and Arkansas has a budget surplus. So what does that mean?
Yeah, so we've had a surplus for 25 of the last 34 years. And every year of the governor, Sarah Huckabee Sanders' administration, we've even had a surplus. A surplus just means we're not spending as much money on state service expenses as we collect in taxes. Back in January, the Department of Finance and Administration Secretary Jim Hudson predicted we would end this year with an extra $334.4 million. Now, that could change depending on how the next 2 months go.
Okay, so how does the surplus lead to tax cuts?
Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders has campaigned on getting rid of the state's individual income tax. Before her, Governor Asa Hutchinson was slowly chipping away at the tax. The state income tax rate was set in 1971, and it didn't change after that for decades. So for 42 years, the highest earners paid 7% in income tax. The number was lower for Arkansans earning less money. But the first change was under Governor Mike Beebe from 7% to 6.9% at the end of his tenure. The story of Arkansas taxes since then is the story of the amount paid by the highest earners and income tax trickling down. Republican Governor Asa Hutchinson came into office, and when he was governor, he cut taxes as many times as he could.
I am thrilled to have this opportunity to sign publicly my first piece of legislation, which is the middle class tax cut.
That's him in 2019. He championed a cut lowering the top rate to 5.9%. By 2022, the highest earners were paying 5.5%. When Hutchinson left the job at the start of 2023, the tax rate for top earners was 4.9%, and the surplus in the state was over $1.6 billion.
So what's been happening since Sanders took office?
Every time the legislature meets, Sanders seeks a new tax cut. So now the state will have one of the lowest income taxes in its history. Households making $26,400 to $94,700 will pay 3.7% in income tax, and that's retroactive to January 1st of this year. This is a little bit of a decrease from last year when the rate was 3.9%. People with higher incomes will pay 3.7% on every $4,700 they make above the threshold. Sanders signed these cuts into law last week after a three-day sprint in the legislature.
It is great to be back here and close out this week's special session and sign not one, not two, but three different tax cuts for the people of Arkansas.
Okay, so far we've been talking about the individual income tax, but there's also changes to the state's corporate tax rate. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so when Sanders took office, the corporate tax rate was 5.3%. The latest laws changed that to 4.1%. The argument for shrinking the corporate tax is that it makes Arkansas more competitive. Republican Representative Les Eves said it this way.
There are states all over the country that are either eliminating or on the path to eliminating or lowering their income tax rate. So we can choose to stay competitive or we'll fall behind.
But there's also this concern expressed by Democratic Representative Ashley Hudson.
A whopping 95% of the corporate tax cut will go out of state, shipping $25 million of Arkansans' hard-earned tax money to home offices in places like California, Texas, and New York.
Over email, she clarified to me that the number comes from the Institute on Taxation and Public Policy. Tax revenues not staying in the state wasn't her only problem with the tax cuts. She echoed an evergreen concern from state Democrats that this money could be spent anywhere else.
We hear a lot about conservative budgeting, but to some people that just might sound like we're ignoring problems.
For $25 million, Arkansas could stabilize rural hospitals and maternity care.
We have 3,000 kids in Arkansas whose parents are desperate for them to have an opportunity for early childhood education.
We need to talk about some significant relief for people.
There's a couple of issues that Democrats often mention when Republicans cut taxes. One is maternal mortality. Arkansas has one of the highest rates of maternal mortality in the nation. We're also the only state that hasn't extended Medicaid coverage to 1 year postpartum. Democrats said this would be a good time to change that. Hudson says if Arkansas joined every other state in extending postpartum Medicaid coverage to a year after giving birth, it would cost $2 million a year. This tax cut isn't cutting any services. The money comes from the surplus, but there's still this feeling from Democrats that tax cuts are the wrong priorities.
Okay, so what's the Republican response to that?
You hear these cuts described a lot as a tax cut for the rich. People in middle and high income earning brackets are paying the same tax. So everyone is getting the same break, but if you make $1 million, the tax rate is going to add up to thousands of dollars in yearly savings, while someone in the middle income bracket, say someone making $50,000, would only save about $50 a year.
Okay, going back to the Democrats' argument for more government spending, what's the Republican response to that?
Well, there's first this sentiment expressed by Republican Representative David Ray. He said Democrats who support spending increases instead of cuts will, quote, never be satisfied.
Every state in America has problems. And you know what? A lot of the states that are not cutting taxes like we're doing, they have just as many, if not more, problems than we have here in Arkansas. The idea that more spending is going to solve all of our problems is ridiculous.
Ray echoed comments the governor made about how the state still funds public services. Sanders listed police, parks, and education as budget priorities that she's passed legislation to fund. And Ray mentioned maternal health and infrastructure. There's also this sentiment of, you know, a cut is a cut. This comes down to the central question in everything I cover as a politics and government reporter. You know, what is the role of government? Republican Senator Matt McKee said, this isn't a question of priorities. It's about the role of government.
Who best serves the people of Arkansas? Is it the churches? Is it the communities? Is it the neighbors that we represent? Or is it the state?
And the governor said it this way.
And thank you to the people of Arkansas, because we know that you're going to spend this money much better than the government ever could.
Okay, so who's actually being affected by these cuts?
Supporters say the cuts add up to thousands of dollars over the decade of tax cuts the state has passed. In the House, Republican Representative Les Eaves again, he said billions have been returned to the taxpayer over the years, while Republican Representative David Ray estimated $2,000 to $5,000 have been saved per person.
So how long did it take the cuts to pass?
It was basically a done deal. There were only a handful of Democratic no votes in each chamber. Democratic Senator Greg Letting was one of them, and here's what he said on the Senate floor.
Yeah, there were better odds that the sun would not rise today than this bill fail on this floor this morning.
Out of the 135 voting members between the House and the Senate, there was 23 no votes. Sanders gave a speech last Wednesday where she said Arkansas spends about $2,200 per person. And she compared this to the spending in larger states like New York, which she said spends almost $13,000 a person, and California, which spends $8,800 per person, noting that these states are both in massive debt. Sanders also mentioned Texas and Florida spending more per person than Arkansas.
I just want to contextualize this because the numbers she cited for New York are both the state and federal per person spending and not the state per capita spending.
California, New York, Texas, and Florida are donor states, so they're required to give large amounts of tax revenue to the federal government. California is required to give more money to the federal government than any other. That money is sometimes redistributed to states that need it. Arkansas gives very little in annual taxes to the federal government. Accounting for federal and state numbers, per capita spending is generally even across states.
Okay, so when will people in Arkansas start to see these cuts take effect?
The income tax cuts are retroactive to January 1st of this year. This means everyone should see a small decrease in their paycheck starting now. And the corporate tax rates will go into effect next year.
Okay, and we'll keep an eye on that story as it continues. That's Little Rock Public Radio's Josie Lenora breaking down the newest slate of tax cuts in Arkansas. Thanks, Josie.
Thanks, Maggie.
Northwest Arkansas residents gathered at the Fayetteville Public Library this week to attend a public meeting led by California-based Swarm Arrow. The drone manufacturer has faced resistance in its recent efforts to open a facility at Drake Field in South Fayetteville. KUAF's Sophia Narani has this report.
Tensions were high last night at a community meeting held by drone manufacturer Swarm Arrow at the Fayetteville Public Library. SWRM chief engineer Peter Kalogiannis fielded questions from Fayetteville residents and others who came to voice their thoughts and ask questions about the company, its use of AI, and their drones being used in warfare.
Truth be told, this is a conversation we should have had a while ago. We should have had this two years ago when we first started coming to Fayetteville. This is one conversation of many we hope to have. We hope to be part of the community, and you deserve to be able to speak with us, to have your questions answered, and to have and for us to share the information that we have.
Some people were concerned.
Based on research, unmanned drones are more dangerous than manned drones. So how have you integrated system-wide safety engineering standards, and what are the standards for that, since this is relatively new?
Some were angry.
What can you do at this point in time? I really want to know, to prove to everybody here, after already having tried to do this in such a shady and underhanded fashion, that we can trust anything that you say now.
There's nothing you can do or say, because this Fayetteville wants peace. And we are visualizing a world where we have leaders that practice diplomacy and make peace with other countries. That's what this group of people wants. So there's nothing you can do or say.
A large part of the conversation centered around an appeal against the issuing of SWRM's business license, filed by Fayetteville resident Jesse Buchanan and City Council member Sarah Moore. The appeal claims that SWRM Aero's manufacturing work falls under a heavier industrial zoning category than the one originally assigned to the site by city staff. The Board of Adjustments, which upheld the appeal last month, cited a lack of clarity on materials being used and their safety. In response to questions on the appeal and materials on site, Kalogiannis says,
As part of this process of our original business license review and then again the follow-up after the appeal, we have worked with the fire chief and presented the chemicals that we'll be using in our process and had the conversation about whether that fits into the business unit use case, and the fire chief is in agreement that they do. We will operate all of these, everything we handle, we will operate in full compliance with local, state, and federal law.
Overall, last night's town hall garnered mixed responses. Fayetteville resident John LaBelle says he appreciated the opportunity for a dialogue.
I hear a lot of different things going on in that room, and a lot of it is that people don't stand for war and that what this company stands for could represent that. But I also know that they're also bringing something to our community that can bring in some economic relief. And when there was chances to hear about it, I heard that they were going to work with the University of Arkansas and allow people just off the street to have jobs. These things matter, and in my opinion, I think war is a terrible thing. I don't believe that, they all had valid points that none of those things are good. But whenever I remove the emotional bias from it, I do hear something that's guaranteed to keep jobs in the community.
Resident Dinah Nash says after this meeting, she still believes SWRM is not a fit for the Fayetteville community.
The strongest concern of most of this audience is the moral concern. We really don't want Northwest Arkansas to be a center for the military-industrial complex. And I think the Northwest Arkansas Council has done some really good things for our community, but I think they're wrong in steering us in this direction, and I think they're going to hear from a lot more people in the community over the next few weeks and months and years, because this is not how we who live here and are from here want our community to be recognized.
SWRM has appealed the Board of Adjustments' decision regarding their business license to the City Council. It's scheduled to be discussed next week.
That was KUAF's Sophia Narani reporting. Central Arkansas's preeminent Juneteenth celebration is returning for its 17th edition. Juneteenth in Little Rock will run through the holiday on June 19th through the 20th in downtown Little Rock. KASU's Marty Scarborough spoke with Keith Fletcher, executive director of the Mosaic Templars Cultural Center, about what we can expect.
The importance of Juneteenth in Little Rock being here specifically where we're located is in the heart of what was a historic Black business district is because this is the area where Juneteenth was celebrated here in Little Rock. Think about historically in Arkansas and also specifically in Little Rock and Central Arkansas, how Juneteenth was celebrated. You had your pastors and your teachers. You had your government officials. You had your church choirs. They were celebrating. So they were picnicking. You had music. You had the reading of the Emancipation Proclamation. There was just a festival. There were parades that happened. You have people eating things that are synonymous with Juneteenth. And so a lot of times people, again, they hear Juneteenth, but again, people are just starting to celebrate in some areas. So they don't even know the customs and traditions that go along with Juneteenth. So red is a really popular, important color for Juneteenth. The red represents freedom and liberty, but also the blood that was shed. And so people will have like, you know, watermelon, drinks that have red, hibiscus. And so there are all these different things that play into that. And that happened right here in the heart of where Mosaic Templars Cultural Center is. Even the founders of Mosaic Templars Cultural Center participated in those early Juneteenth celebrations. And so for us, it's really important that Juneteenth is rooted here on 9th Street, because a lot of the history of when Arkansans in this area started celebrating is right here where the museum is, in the very footprint of the history of the Mosaic Templars of America.
Well, let's get into some of the specific things now that you're going to be doing to celebrate over the course of those two days. I see on Friday you've got something that you're referring to as a summit. Give us some details about that.
Absolutely. The summit is our inaugural experience. We are continuing to expand the footprint of Juneteenth in Little Rock and make it a multi-day experience. Our summit is where we have a day-long session of speakers. It is, of course, Juneteenth here in Little Rock is one of the largest in the nation, and it is a premier cultural convening. We're dedicating it to talking about economic mobility, workforce development, and meaningful community advancement. It will be happening at the Robinson Center in partnership with the City of Little Rock and the Little Rock Convention and Visitors Bureau. So from 9 to 5 p.m. at the Robinson Center, people will get a chance to come in and hear all types of sessions from, you know, how women are leading the future to, you know, Stax Records, the legacy of the South, and how amazing it was to hear from speakers like Al Bell, which is going to be phenomenal. We have keynote sessions that day. I'm telling you, the powerhouse keynote sessions featuring none other than the Little Rock Nine. We have three of the members of the Little Rock Nine is Elizabeth Eckford, Dr. Terrence Roberts, and Carlotta Wallace Lanier, who will be talking about their history of being students at Central High School and also how their legacy continues to move forward. We also have our football legend, great Darren McFadden, who will be with Fred Harris, who is known for the Pivot podcast. I'm sorry, Fred Taylor, who's known for the Pivot podcast. So we've got some great powerhouse keynote sessions from national speakers, but then also we've got sessions for everybody. If you're into culture and fashion, we've got sessions around that. We've got sessions around music and poetry. We've got sessions around economic development and enterprise and tech. So all of these sessions are free that people can absolutely register for. But then we have an expo hall, and that expo hall is an opportunity where people can receive resources from, you know, how do I, you know, get a job, to, you know, how do I get more financial security? Or even if you just are walking around because you want some freebies, because what is a day of sessions and vendors without being able to go into the Expo Empowerment Hall and get a bag full of goodies, right? And so the day is all about economic mobility, empowerment, community advancement, and learning. But we also want people to have a fabulous time. So there'll be live music and a DJ and a cultural opening session. There's a little bit of something for everybody at our Juneteenth summit happening this year, which is Friday, June 19th, the actual Juneteenth day. So we're super excited about that. And it's free to everybody that wants to attend. I will say that it will fill up quickly. These sessions will fill up quickly. So we do ask people to register.
Okay, so that's Friday's event. Now, Saturday, people are going to be coming together, but in somewhat of a different kind of atmosphere. Compare and contrast Friday to Saturday.
Absolutely. So Friday is our summit. It's our learning, convening experience. It's a time for us to share, to remember, to sit, to listen, to explore, to take notes, to meet vendors, and just to really reflect. And it's in an indoor space on the Friday. The Saturday, we outside, Marty, as we like to say, we are outside. And we are truly outside on the Saturday. It is from 7 to 7. We have our 5K, our Juneteenth 5K. It's our fifth annual Juneteenth 5K, where we run through history. And so if you are a runner or a walker, or you just want to be a part of the experience, we're asking people to come out at 5 a.m., and they get a chance to literally run through history. It's a one-of-a-kind, unique experience where people are getting a chance to run through a lot of the Black neighborhoods in downtown Little Rock. People get a chance to run past Mifflin Gibbs' home, which he was the first African-American judge in the country. They get a chance to run past some of our HBCUs, like Arkansas Baptist, actually through the campus of Philander Smith, which is pretty cool. Also by Central High National Historic Site, and then our Dunbar Historic Black Neighborhood, oldest neighborhood Black in Little Rock. And then they get a chance to end at Dreamland Ballroom, which is where so many great musicians performed here in Arkansas and Little Rock, as we know. So that's truly a great experience. And then after that, people get a chance to just kick back and enjoy our festival. We have over 150 vendors that span 9th Street. So just that footprint of what 9th Street used to be with Black businesses, we bring that once again back to 9th Street. And we can't, of course, we can't forget about the music. So everyone from gospel artist Malik Oliver to the Big John Miller Band to Keith Savage, I mean, the list from jazz to blues, gospel, R&B, we have a whole festival lineup of our local artists that it's always so important to support. So we're excited that from around the region, dancers and music are happening on our main stage. We have a health expo that's happening on our upstairs. Kids Zone, can't forget about Kids Zone. This is not just for the adults. We have a full Kids Zone for children that takes up an entire block. And so it's just a great, great day. And then we have our national artist, Carrie Hilson and Lloyd. Carrie Hilson is an amazing songwriter, performer, Grammy nominated, and then also Lloyd is an R&B sensation. So again, they will close the evening. So from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., people can bring their own chairs if they want to kick back with their own chairs and relax. We have plenty of seating as well, but our festival last year, we topped 10,000. And so it's a free event. We want people to come to Little Rock. We want them to visit the exhibit, but we also want them to experience the culture.
That was Keith Fletcher, Executive Director of the Mosaic Templars Cultural Center, speaking with KASU's Marty Scarborough. More info on this year's Juneteenth in the Rock is online at arkansasheritage.com. And that's it for this week. The Arkansas News Wrap is brought to you by the Arkansas Newsroom, a collaboration between KUAF in Fayetteville, KASU in Jonesboro, and Little Rock Public Radio. You can find this week's episode on any of our station's websites. Until next time, I'm Daniel Breen, and this is the Arkansas News Wrap.